Hello.
Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back. How are we doing today?
Doing great, other than it's hot as balls out.
It is fucking heat scorching out.
Fucking,
oh my
108
God.
Degrees.
I am Jesus. Dying on the inside slowly.
Outside, too. I mean, you're getting baked like you're in the microwave.
Yeah, and I'm feeling basted like a Christmas turkey. I just gotta say, it's been a very awesome week, and I can't wait to be telling you this story that I have for you this week. Actually, really
awesome.
Excited.
Awesome. My stories I've done ahead of time, so they are kind of themed.
Okay.
To a holiday that just passed, you know, Father's Day.
Yeah.
So there's that.
So you got Father's Day murders, or?
Yes.
What are you doing?
Father's Day murders.
Where they kill their family and happy Father's Day?
Kind of. Kind of.
The best gift of all is silence. It's what I've been told in the recent years of fatherhood. But I'm not. I don't have a child. I promise. I just like to kill people.
Slowly, fair enough. Fair enough.
Surely. And fair silence. Enough.
I know you can't see it, right now, but in the center of our table, we got a new centerpiece.
Yeah, it's a fucking, he is beautiful.
Came from Loot Fright.
Yeah.
I get that every other month. It was a sea-themed box this time, so we got Call of Cthulhu.
Sorry, I just kept on thinking of the Cookie Monster and like C is for cookie.
Fuck me.
Alright, well.
Goddamn. I got this really cool shot glass.
Ooh, that's amazing. Orca!
It is Jaws themed.
Wait, Orca's a whale.
Orca is the name of the boat from Jaws.
Well, that's a little miss.
Amity Island.
Amity. Oh, okay.
It's Jaws themed.
Okay, you win.
And then I got really cool. It's a little hot. That's why we're in tank top today. But Creature from the Black Lagoon shirt came in the box as well.
Fuck yeah, that's dope.
And I got a Jaws pin. Yeah, as you know, I have a Friday the 13th backpack, and I have like little different horror pins on it. And that's going to be added to my collection.
Hell yeah, that's
so yeah,
pretty
it's
badass.
Really good. If you have Loot Crate or Fright Crate, occasionally you don't get anything too cool, but every once in a while, get some cool stuff out of it.
Do you get to customize it for yourself and your pleasure?
No.
No?
No. You just sign up, and then every other month you get a crate.
How come I feel like some of those crates are like, what do we got in the bag?
Like, right. It's like, what's on the shelf that we still haven't gotten rid of yet? Yep, that'll work.
You know, we used to do that at my old job where we take all the product that wasn't sold and we put it in a bag and we'd be like, oh, it's a mystery bag. Mysteries
kind of
gay.
I've heard of places doing that kind of stuff.
It's exactly how you run a business. Yep. I just want to say we just got done watching I watched a movie over the week, and it was very good.
What was it?
It was it's called The Forest. It's about the
I know that one. Yeah.
Oh, so the what was it? The Akihabara Forest in Japan. Yeah, and it was fairly decent. It wasn't bad at all.
Nice. Well, the wife and I, we just finished watching a series called, called Evil.
Okay.
It's been out for a little bit. We're just now getting to it.
What's it about?
So there's this almost priest. Like, he started his priesthood apprenticeship.
So, pre-child rapist.
And he didn't finish it. And then he has a couple partners, two partners. One's a tech guy. And then one's a psychologist. And together, they get these case files from the church, Catholic Church, I figured I'd clarify that, and they go out to either to prove that it is real or fake. And, like, they get sent out, people say, oh, my nephew needs an exorcism. So they go out there and they figure out if he really does need an exorcism or if it's just a mental issue.
Biggest tantrum of his life.
And we haven't finished the first season, but we're hooked. We watched 8 episodes of it last night.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty awesome. What's that on?
What was that on?
Was it on Hulu? Netflix?
Netflix.
It's on Netflix. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it a Netflix original series?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Well, shit. Okay.
So we just watched that. Really good. I also finished October Faction.
Oh, okay. I know what that is. Okay.
Also Netflix. They need more seasons.
They do.
that was good. It was a good show.
Have you finished watching what I suggested to you? The Haunting of Bly Manor?
I have not finished that. I'll get back to it. You know how it is.
I know.
There's so many good shows out there.
There's a lot, and a lot of catching up to do, especially with a lot of the cool shit that's coming out.
Yeah. Well, and not to mention the shows that I've finished. Like, yeah. Supernatural's over with, and I still haven't finished it.
Yeah, and The Boys, he's been fucking training. Jensen Ackles has been. He looks really good.
Right. And then, did you see what I sent you the other day?
Which thing?
About the Winchesters.
Oh, how they were going to do... Yeah. They're talking about doing a TV show of John and Mary Winchester. Yep.
And it's going to be narrated by Dean.
It's going to be yeah, that's going to be badass.
It's going to be awesome.
See,
and it's by his and his wife's company.
Really?
Yeah, their production company.
I didn't know they had an
actual... I didn't either until I was reading the article and I was like, oh, okay.
See, I know that they've talked about coming back and maybe doing something with Supernatural again.
And would be why there. That
yeah,
would do it.
They also were talking about coming back and actually just doing Supernatural. So I'm hoping that comes true as well.
They could do so many just like offshoots, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, throughout their whole 15 seasons, there was all the other Hunters.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they could do something with that.
Yeah, no, I would definitely love to see more of Dean and Sam Winchester. I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah. And then our techie tech guy and myself just started watching we're going to do a horror movie marathon.
Nice.
And so we started with the Hellraiser series.
Ooh.
We just watched the first one just a little bit ago, a couple hours ago.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Good movie. Classic, you know.
That is a classic. We'll have to talk about that on another episode. The Hellraiser series.
Oh, yeah. That's good. That's a good one. Yeah.
Is there anything new going on in your world?
No, not really. Just trying to stay cool. Trying to stay out of this fucking heat.
Yeah, fuck this heat. Well, I just have a question for you. Is there anything special you want to talk about this week? You know, pertaining to said show. The show that we're in right now. The one...
Did I miss a memo?
Yeah, oh, did you, I think so. I think you have a memo. Don't you have a special horror fact of the week?
Oh, yeah. I thought there was something else you're talking about, so I'm like... That's why you're asking me. I'm just sitting here going...
Just blame the heat. Just blame the heat.
I'm just like, what the hell are you talking about?
Oh, man.
Yeah. It's been a long fucking day.
I thought
maybe there was a memo that I forgot to read that something new is changing or something. I don't know.
Yeah, no, not yet. Not quite.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right, well.
So,
All right. Oh, what? Not sure what happened there. You disappeared. And then you came back. I don't know. So, like I said, my stories and everything were themed for Father's Day.
Yeah.
We ended up not using them. We ended up doing something completely different from our normal. We played a game, which was a lot of fun. So, this week we're going to be talking about the movie The Stepfather. Wow. Holy shit, everybody's dying of the heat over here today.
Yeah, we're all dying.
So we're going to talk about the movie The Stepfather. Stepfather was made in 1987. It was one of the first truly chilling horror movies. I'll never forget the opening sequence. Terry O'Quinn calmly wipes the blood off his face, changes his appearance, and walks off into the night, leaving behind his murdered wife and children. The stepfather was definitely scary, but the true story of what inspired that movie is far much worse. On November 9th, 1971, a quiet, unassuming accountant in New Jersey committed a horrifying crime. After his three teenage children had left for school, he crept into the kitchen, shot his wife of 22 years in the back of the head. He then climbed up the stairs to his mother's suite, kissed her before shooting her in the face. His name? John List. Once he'd put his grisly plan into action, List reportedly felt he couldn't back out. He cleaned the home, moved the body of his wife to the empty ballroom where he'd laid sleeping bags on the floor, and then he began to write. List stopped the family's milk, mail, newspaper deliveries. He sent letters to his children's schools and part-time jobs explaining that they would be out of town for an undetermined amount of time to deal with a family emergency. He closed both his own and his mother's bank accounts. This God-fearing, deeply religious man then wrote a 5-page letter to his pastor explaining the reasons behind the murders. Once that was done, he had nothing to do but wait and eat lunch. Murdering makes you hungry, you know. His 16-year-old daughter, Patricia, was the first to come home from school. As she walked inside the house, she was shot in the back of the head. List did the same to his 13-year-old son, Frederick, and then drove to his eldest son's school to watch him play a soccer game. When they returned home, List murdered his last remaining child. But unlike the others, John Jr. didn't go quietly. His body jerked as List emptied a 9mm and a .22 into him. John Jr. was shot multiple times in the chest and face.
God damn.
Yeah.
That was something.
Yeah, and that's what the Stepfather movie is based off of.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, then. It's pretty fucking intense.
It's interesting how he laid out that plan, killed his whole family, and then just walked away. I mean, there's so much. We could do a whole episode on just this guy.
Yeah, no List. Shit.
There's so much to that story. I had to condense it down, you know.
I feel like I've heard that story on, like, I want to say Time Suck.
You might have.
With Dan Cummins. Yeah, I think I might have. But it was just a reminder of, like, how fucked up that was in all reality.
Yeah, and in the movie, the character would, like, change his appearance. So he went from family to family trying to get his perfect family.
It's perfect.
And each time when things started to go south, he just murdered the family, changed his appearance, and move.
Jesus Christ.
Change professions, everything. He never stuck with the same profession.
That's pretty fucking intense.
Yeah.
Fucking smart dude, though.
Very smart. Very smart guy.
Jesus.
The movie was really good. It spawned a couple sequels and a remake.
I don't think I've seen the remake.
It's not as good as the original.
Okay.
Obviously, I mean, there's so many times where the remakes are not.
Yeah, where the remakes are...
shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Friday 13th.
Yeah.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
God, that one was terrible.
Nightmare on Elm Street actually wasn't bad, honestly. It wasn't bad. The actor did a great job as Freddy.
He did good for what he had to work with.
I think that's true for most movies. The actors are doing their best with what they have to work with. Because yeah. It's not just them, you know. It's not like they get the script and they're like, yeah, I'm going to play the character like this. No, you got the director's ideas. You got the producer's ideas. You got everybody else's ideas that go into it that say, no, I don't think my character would act like that. And the producer's like, the fuck it doesn't.
I think that is a great storytelling of Hollywood right there.
You know, I mean, many actors, I think, get a bad rep when it's not their fault.
Yeah, I mean, like, Ryan Reynolds got a lot of shit for Green Lantern. And that wasn't his fault, it was the script.
It was not his fault. And the CGI. He is a phenomenal actor. That movie wouldn't have been so bad had they done a real suit, not a fucking CG suit.
Yeah, and that's what they've done a lot better with in the recent years with superhero movies.
Yeah, you know, they saw the error of their ways. Because they probably... It's a lot cheaper to do a CG suit.
I don't think it would be.
Out of the multiple suits that they have to physically make and keep up on and stuff versus the green screen suit. Like, and then they just superimpose the...
I would have much rather them fucking bulk up Shazam with CGI than fucking...
Oh, God.
The stuffed muscle suit. God, like, he didn't bulk up or anything. They were just like, oh, let me just put on this, you want muscles? How much? You want big muscles? Okay. Oh, yeah. Let's make you as big as fucking, Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's fucking do it. And then, he looked like a stuffed marshmallow the entire movie.
Yeah, he did. But, yeah.
Yeah. But, anyway, back on track. So... you said your stories?
I have two stories.
Okay.
I know that was kind of a story, but it was also a horror fact related to a movie.
Based on a book. Based on a movie.
Based on a true life events. Story.
So you have Father's Day murderers gone right. Did they not get the saw that they wanted for Father's Day? Or?
Well, this first one just takes place on Father's Day.
Is coffee too hot?
So.
Trying to figure this out here.
It's interesting. As I read the story and I put it together, I was kind of intrigued by it. How it all went.
Okay.
It was interesting how things... went down the way they did.
All right, let's hear it. I'm down. I'm ready.
All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's do this shit. Some technical difficulties going on there. We're going to be talking about the Father's Day bank murders. Sunday, June 16th, 1991. At approximately 5:04 a.m., the United Bank Tower, located at 17th Avenue and Lincoln Street in Denver, Colorado, an alarm went off in a basement storage room. Records of the incident after the fact showed that the guard had turned it off, taking no further action. It's unknown if this event had anything to do with the robbery / murders that would follow. Hours later, at 9:14 a.m., a man identifying himself as the bank's vice president, Bob Bardwell, gained entry through the side freight elevator after requesting it. To do so, he used the street-level security phone to call the bank's guard room. However, upon being greeted by one guard, 33-year-old guard William McCollum Jr., the mystery man dropped his facade and forced McCollum to the sub-basement area of the bank, where he then murdered the guard. McCollum was later found to have been shot 3 times in the head, once in his torso, once in his arm. After killing him, the intruders slashed his body, stashed his body into a storage room, and then stole his electronic pass card key. After picking up the 5 spent shell casings off the floor, the intruder made his way through the bank tunnels and up one level to the basement, where the vault and guard station were both located. During this time, lurking in the shadows, an alarm was set off at 6 minutes later at 9:20 a.m. when he entered the stairwell. Despite the sound of the alarm, the killer headed to the vault, entering the guard room first. There, the gunman forced 2 more unarmed guards, 41-year-old Philip and 21-year-old Scott, into a battery room where they were both shot dead. McCarthy's body was later found discovered on top of Mankoff's by investigators at the crime scene afterwards, a plausible indication that the two struggled for control over the gunman. At this point, the investigators believe the third guard, 21-year-old Todd Wilson, returned to the area during the or immediately after the shooting, who may or may not have been aware of what just occurred to his co-workers, only to be fatally shot from several feet away from the battery room where the bodies of the other two guards were. Before leaving the guard room and entering the vault area, the intruder removed and tampered with evidence to eliminate any trace of his identity. The perpetrator seized 10 videotapes, bank keys, a two-way radio, and pages of the guard's logbook. Electronic records from the incident showed that at 9:48 a.m., the door to the vault was open. At the time, 6 employees were in the middle of processing the day's cash deliveries when the intruder helped them up. After being instructed to cover their eyes and lie on the floor, he ordered the senior vault manager, David Barranco, to fill a satchel with approximately $200,000 in cash from the workstations. Next, he forced the employees to crawl into a small room near the vault, known as a man trap, before making his escape at 9:56 a.m. According to further electronic records from the incident, leaving the employees locked in the man trap, the staff eventually freed themselves 20 minutes after the robber escaped, using a broken spoon found on the sill of the man trap's door. In the aftermath, all 6 of the vault staff were left unharmed. To the confusion of investigators, not only was the amount of money the intruder got away with not enough to fill the satchel up completely, but he did not take any of the cash from the vault itself, other than, you know, what was in the cash drawers that he was taking. While the staff was still locked in the man room and before he left the scene during his escape, the robber took the time to collect all the spent shell casings left on the ground from where he fired his weapon. By the time investigators got to the scene after the fact, the only physical evidence that remained was the spent bullets from the 18 shots fired from the Colt trooper used, of which only one was determined to have missed its intended target. When asked for the physical description of the robber/killer, the employees described him as appearing to be in his late 50s or 60s, a salt-and-peppered mustache, wearing a gray sports coat, a white shirt, a multicolored necktie, blue or gray slacks, a brown fedora, and mirrored sunglasses. The witnesses also recalled that the perpetrator had a bandage on his left cheek. Over 40 FBI agents and 24 detectives were involved in the ensuing investigation. As mentioned before, investigators were left perplexed as to why the suspect only took $197,000, not even enough to fill up the satchel used. Let alone, why did he not take any of the cash from the vault? Another matter that did not make sense was why the suspect killed the unarmed 4 guards but spared the bank employees. Since the beginning of the investigation into the killer, the investigators suspected the killer of having some degree of association with the bank. Not only that, but some thought that the intruder could have been a police officer since a total of 18 rounds were fired. The significance behind this was that 18 rounds were a standard load carried by officers on duty, a fully loaded revolver, and two speed loaders. Eventually, the pool of persons of interest was narrowed to a man by the name of James King, a retired Denver police officer who years earlier worked as a guard at the building between 1989 and 1990 after retiring from the Denver PD in 86. King was also known to have been in insignificant amount of debt in 91, which included $25,000 in credit cards. He and his wife had filed bankruptcy a year after he retired from the PD. Furthermore, the weapon of choice used in the crime was determined to be a Colt Trooper, of which King did own at one point, but stated himself to have gotten rid of it after it became defective. Interestingly enough, at the time he was writing a novel that especially interested police. In six chapters, King mentioned police being shot in the back of the head, the way the guards were all killed. Despite no physical evidence tying him to the crime, on the evening of July 4th, 1991, King was arrested after being picked out of a lineup.
Wow. That is, damn.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say to that. That's fucking...
Yeah. The fact that he killed the unarmed guards, but left the bank employees alone, like...
It kind of shows that he had something to do with the bank and knew people.
Yeah, well, the fact that he didn't take anything out of the vault itself, he just took their daily cash.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man.
It's not really a good bank robber.
No, not really.
Do you want anything from the vault? No. Just want the cash and your till. Let's go. Yeah,
just the till. We're good. I know we're down here at the vault, but just the till.
You sure? There's like $1 million.
Nah, 200,000's good.
I mean, it's all insured money. Nah. I'm kind of cut on time.
Yeah. No.
That's stupid.
Right? He just...
Oh, man.
He just fucking busts through the vault door.
Oh yeah,
and they're like, 200,000. Here you go, and he's just so fucking happy.
Oh yeah,
like come on, man.
How do you think he'd get away with that? Like, I don't know. If I was gonna rob a bank, and if I was ever to, I'm just saying, I would do it the right way, and I would do it like old school cartoon wise, and just drill a hole underneath the vault. Just go under there, dig a tunnel, and then boom.
Done.
Carry it all out.
Yeah.
And then to cover the hole, I'll put like plastic on the floor. Makes it look like the floor itself. And then, you know, someone falls down. I know I'm fucked, but it's okay. That's just my plan. I don't know. I haven't thought it through much. You can tell.
Yeah. Not at all. Not at all. Just making it up on the fly.
No, for sure. Oh, that's crazy, though.
Yeah. This next one's even crazier.
Oh, shit. All right, let's hear it.
This next one does not take place on Father's Day, though.
It doesn't.
No. This next one is a little story about a teen couple charged with killing the girl's dad and laughed about the murder in a deranged video. Teen couple charged with killing girl's dad and laughed about the murder in the deranged video. A teenage girl and her boyfriend charged with killing her father in Las Vegas laughed about murdering somebody and then having lots of sex in the deranged cell phone video that they record while still on the lam. The shocking footage obtained by KLAS is being used by prosecutors as evidence against Aaron, who's 18, and his girlfriend, that is 16-year-old Sierra, the daughter of the former Nevada state senator. And it goes something like this. Welcome back to our YouTube channel. Day 3 after murdering somebody, Guerrero says with a smirk on his face. Whoa, don't put that on camera. Shh, Sierra replies, giggling. It was worth it, he adds, before pecking his girlfriend on the forehead. The teen girl then brags how they had sex a lot today, which her boyfriend mumbles, it was payment for doing the job. He then softly slapped her face and put his hand around her throat, and her with him pretending to choke her before finally looking at the camera with her eyes wide open, saying casually, so yeah. The apparent admission was filmed in April, 6 days after they allegedly killed her father, Daniel, 45, attempting to dismember him and setting fire to his house, the report said. They then fled in the father's blue Nissan Altima, but they were caught less than a week later in Salt Lake City while allegedly planning to flee to California. The father was murdered after the teens were told by their parents they could no longer be together. The dark admission was reportedly made after the couple killed Sierra's 45-year-old daughter, or father, set fire to his house. They stabbed him and then attempted to set fire and dismember his body, using his bank cards to buy items used in the gruesome crime. Prosecutors presented to the grand jury photos that included the daughter buying bleach and her boyfriend buying a saw, lighter fluid, and gloves, the report said. They were also shown images of the blood-soaked crime scene with knives, saws, the lighter fluid, and burned material, they said. A blood-soaked rug was found in the trunk of the vehicle, which they used as a getaway car. The smoke-filled crime scene was discovered after Daniel's mother, Christine, couldn't get a hold of him and grew increasingly suspicious of her granddaughter's explanations, according to text messages obtained. His phone has been acting up, but he's okay, the teen texted her concerned grandmother at some point, according to the text. It should all be fixed by tomorrow night, no worries. The next day, Christine asked her granddaughter, why are you doing this? Now the police are involved. Despite being just 16, the daughter has been charged as an adult, but cannot face the death penalty of Nevada state law. Along with the murder charges, the two have been indicted on charges of conspiracy, arson, robbery, fraudulent use of a credit card. The boyfriend, as he was 18, is potentially facing the death penalty. His attorney told the station that the case will be reviewed by the district attorney's office next week at the time of this. Whoa, don't put that on camera, she said, blah, blah, blah. Sorry, some of this information is, like, regurgitated. It's all one article. Sierra's mother, Elizabeth, was once a GOP state senator who was elected at 27 as the youngest person to the Nevada Senate in 2010. The Las Vegas Review-Journal has reported she has since remarried and has not yet spoken publicly about the allegations against her daughter. The dead man's family told KLAS in a statement that he was first and foremost a loving father, brother, and son who is the heart of his family.
Honestly, dude, I'm sitting here thinking, like, I mean, if you look at the picture of the couple.
Right, yeah.
Those are the kind of people that are, the guy especially, who looks like the kind of guy that says he has a lot of sex, but he doesn't. And he's like, yeah, I fuck. I fuck all the time.
Like 20 yeah. times a day, bro.
I fuck. And then, like, this is the stupidest thing. That could be, like, a horror comedy fucking movie. We're like, oh, shit, I fucking hate your dad. And then
let's
like,
fucking kill him.
Let's fucking kill him.
Run away to California.
Okay,
we got famous actors.
Let's fucking do it. Okay, I have a brilliant idea. Let's fucking make a YouTube channel.
Let's do a YouTube video of it.
Fucking, yeah, I killed. I fucking kill all day, bro. That's exactly
baby.
I just see this all just being a fucking accident, like him being mad, just fucking, like, hitting his her dad over the fucking side of the head.
Accidentally knocking him out, and he's like, fuck, I killed him. He's only knocked. He's only unconscious.
He's unconscious. So it's on his fucking body. Oh, shit, he wasn't dead. Quick, kill him. Oh, God. That'd be fucking hilarious.
The daughter's in the bathroom the whole time. Grandma. And he's like, fuck, what am I going to do? So he starts killing her, and then she comes out of the bathroom, and he's all just like,
hey, baby.
Yeah, I fuck.
He's like, we're going to do a lot of sex for me killing your dad.
Oh, man.
I did you a favor. Now you can have a lot of sex.
Jesus Christ. Like, fucking, I can just see it, like, in my head, this dude just going to, like, fucking Home Depot, just grabbing a saw, some gloves, some fucking lighter fluid, and shit.
I could see him asking the employees, do you think this saw would cut bone?
It's a bone saw, right?
I know it says skill saw. I have skills, but will it cut bone? It doesn't say if it cuts bone.
What are you cutting?
Just bone.
Yeah, I fuck.
Yeah, I fuck all the time, okay?
Just fucking going along. Oh, God, that'd be fucking hilarious. Yeah. That's great. That's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
All because their parents said that they couldn't be together anymore.
Oh, boy. Happy Father's Day. Late Father's Day to all the fathers who's got to put up with assholes and asshole boyfriends out Jesus. There.
Yeah, yeah.
And girlfriends.
Really makes you wonder. And that was a recent story. Within the last, I want to say it was like 6 years.
See grandma calling, hey, is your father home? No. Tell her, yeah, I fuck. So he's doing the background.
How you been doing? Yeah, I fuck.
It's my grandma. Yeah, I fuck. That's all I see.
Oh, that's a nice boyfriend you got there, honey.
Let me talk to your father. He ain't here.
He's busy.
He's busy. I fuck, and then that's his old excuse in court.
Like, I have a lot of sex.
Gets the death penalty when he last words. Yeah, I fuck. It's fucking electric chair. Woo!
I did it for the sex.
I did it for the views. God damn.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Oh, that's perfect. Anyway.
Oh, shit.
Oh, that's great. I got something. Something gruesome. It's love. It's murder.
Yeah.
It's everything every person wishes for on this great American earth.
Hey, so I just have one question.
Oh, what's your question? Do I fuck? Yeah, I do.
When are we gonna start playing games again?
Oh, we'll play. Eventually. Listen. It's okay. I actually,
we haven't played any in a while. I mean,
ever since season one, I know.
Yeah.
You gotta listen.
Listen, Linda, listen.
It's gonna be okay. It's gonna be alright.
I'm just curious, you know.
I got a huge plan coming around, okay? Aww. It's fucking huge.
Is it?
Yeah, hi. No. Yeah, no, we'll play a game on the next episode. Promise.
Okay.
I have a special one planned.
Oh, fuck.
It's a special. It's called, Yeah, Do I Fuck?
Oh, yeah!
I'm sorry. That was just a wide shot.
I was going to try to find that video, but, you know, it's...
You're trying to find the video? Yeah, I fuck!
Because
like...
I wanted to see it. I wanted to see it because I think that'd be fucking hilarious.
I
would have had to play, too, but I couldn't. I didn't.
Probably on YouTube.
You know, they might have taken it down as evidence.
Oh, probably, honestly.
So.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
But fair. I didn't look, really. I looked for pictures. I didn't think about finding the video till now.
So, I have one for you today.
Just one?
Just one. It's a long one.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Yeah, that's what...
Yeah.
It's the lie I always get told. Anyway,
All right.
Are we ready?
I'm ready. I'm waiting, man.
All right.
Let's make this happen, Captain.
All right. So, Dennis Nilsson was best known as the Scottish murderer of many young men in the late 1970s and early 1980s. Who was Dennis Nilsson? Sounds like a pedophile. But sorry, that was my own little spin on it. Dennis Nilsson was a serial killer who was born in Fraserburgh, Scotland. Though Nilsson recognized his homosexual desires when he was never comfortable with them and began acting on them through murder and dismemberment. Nilsson's first victim was in 1978. He went on to kill, according to his confession, 12 young men and dissected their bodies. When police finally arrested him in 1983, it quickly became apparent that had they linked a series of reported incidents from lucky escapees over the previous 5 years, they might have well have halted his ghoulish killing spree considerably sooner. Early life was awesome. Nilsson was born on November 23rd, 1945 in Fraserburgh, Scotland. His parents' marriage was an unhappy one, and as a result, Nilsson, his mother, and his siblings lived with his maternal grandfather, whom Nilsson adored. Nilsson claimed that his beloved grandfather's unexpected death when he was just 6 years old and the traumatizing viewing of his corpse at the funeral led to his later behavioral psychopathology. Call me a retard. Anyway, his mother went on to remarry and have four more children, leaving Nilsson with a withdrawn and lonely child. Aware of his homosexual attractions, he claimed no sexual encounters as an adolescent, and at 16, he enlisted in the Army. He became a cook, serving as a butcher in the Army Catering Corps, learning the skills that served him so well during his five-year killing spree. Upon leaving the Army in 1972, he took up police training, where he discovered a fascination with morgue visits and autopsied bodies. Despite the obvious advantages that police work gave to develop his morbid tastes, he resigned and went on to become a recruitment interviewer. Nilsson's first official brush with the police came in 1973. David Painter, a young man whom Nilsson had met through his work, claimed that Nilsson had taken pictures of him while he was asleep. Painter was so incensed that he required hospitalization. As a result of their confrontation, Nilsson was brought in for questioning about the incident, but was subsequently released without charge. In 1975, he took up a cohabitation with David Galatian in a garden apartment situated at 195 Melrose Avenue in North London. Although Galatian denied that they had had a homosexual relationship, this lasted 2 years when Galatian left. Nilsson's life began a downward spiral into alcohol and loneliness, which culminated in his first murder 18 months later. Nilsson became increasingly disturbed by his sexual encounters, which only seemed to reinforce his loneliness when they were over. Anybody heard of a pocket pussy? He met his first young victim in a pub. I'm just kidding. Sorry. That was a joke. On December 29th, 1978, invited him home as he had on previous occasions. The next morning, overcame by a desire to prevent the young man from leaving, he strangled him with a tie before drowning him in a bucket of water. taking the corpse to his bathroom to wash it and then placed it back in his bed, later remarking that he found the corpse beautiful. He attempted to have sex, unsuccessfully, and then spent the night sleeping next to the dead man. He finally rid the corpse under his floorboards for 7 months before removing it and burning the decaying remains in his back garden. Ooh, the petunias must be growing nice. Nilsson had another close call with the police in October 1979 when a young student accused Nilsson of trying to strangle him during a bondage play session. Despite the student's claims, no charges were pressed against Nilsson. Nilsson encountered his second victim, Canadian tourist Kenneth Ockenden, at a pub on December 3rd, 1979. Following a day of sightseeing and drinking, which ended at Nielsen's apartment, Nilsson again succumbed to his fears of abandonment and strangled Ockenden to death with an electrical cable. He cleaned up the corpse as he did before and shared the bed with it overnight. He took photos, engaged in sex, and finally deposited the corpse under the floorboards, removing it frequently and engaging in conversation as if Ockenden was still alive. Oh, man. That conversation probably was silent. His third victim, some 5 months later, was Martin Duffy, a homeless 16-year-old who he invited to spend the night on May 13, 1980. I'm just going to say this really fast. How fucked is that? Hey, hey, you want a hot meal and a fucking bed to sleep in? Promise I'm not a weirdo.
That's awful. That's awful.
Like, it's a little scary. With his first victim, Nielsen strangled, then drowned him, before bringing him back to bed and masturbating over the teenager's corpse. Duffy was kept in a wardrobe for 2 weeks before joining Ockenden under the floorboards. His next victim was a prostitute, Billy Sutherland. Ooh, Sutherland sounds like a slut name. 27, who had the misfortune of following Nielsen home one night. He too was strangled. Another one of his victims, 24-year-old Malcolm Barlow, was an orphan with learning disabilities who was soon dispatched by strangulation. I'm sorry.
It sounds like they're all fucking retarded.
A little bit.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, man. That was.
I'm sorry, dude.
How bad is that?
I'm
like,
not too well.
Hey, little buddy, you want to go home with me? Oh, you sure. Like,
hey, baby.
I just think it'd be hilarious. Anyway, let's continue. By 1981, Nielsen had killed 12 men in the apartment, of whom 4 could be identified. Given his penchant for preying on the homeless and the unemployed in a large city, this is probably less surprising than it might be in a smaller community. Nielsen claimed he went into a killing trance and on 7 occasions actually freed the men rather than complete the act because he was able to snap out of it. The majority of his victims were not so lucky. God, those lucky sons of bitches. I would have been, you know, thankful to be killed and jerked on. Just around and laid down in a bed. I mean, that sounds comfortable. Yep. That's what a lot of people told me I was in my whole life. By the time Barlow was killed, Nielsen was forced to stuff him under the kitchen sink.
No more room under the floorboards, you had to go under the kitchen sink.
Yeah, that's exactly,
Jesus,
you know.
Christ. Must have been a midget to fit under there.
Get in here, you little bastard. As he was rapidly running out of storage space with a half a dozen bodies hidden around the apartment, he was forced to spray his rooms twice a day to be rid of the flies that were hatched from decomposing bodies. What a Febreze commercial. Like,
he totally should have been doing the Febreze commercials there.
Yeah, that's what,
like,
I'm...
It's so good it gets rid of the smell of the dead bodies. I mean, what dead bodies?
Oh, shit. Exactly. Smells like Hawaiian breeze coming down my hallway.
Anyway, death.
Yes. When neighbors complained about the smell, he convinced them they stemmed from the structural problems with the building. to get rid of the corpses, he would remove his clothing and dismember them on the stone kitchen floor with a large kitchen knife, sometimes also boiling the skulls to remove the flesh. Oh, what a great stew. And also replacing the organs in a viscera of plastic bags for disposal. He buried limbs in the garden and in the shed and stuffed torsos into suitcases until he could burn the remains into a bonfire at the end of the garden. On occasions, he would burn fires all day without raising any suspicion from neighbors. He generally crushed the bones once the fire consumed the flesh. And police found thousands of bone fragments in the garden during later forensic examinations. In 1982, in a desperate attempt to stifle his homicidal behavior, Nielsen moved into a top floor apartment at 23 Cranley Gardens, Muswell Hill, also in North London, which had no garden and no convenient floorboards. So things were gonna be different. Still unable to quell his impulses, a further 3 victims were killed in this apartment between his arrival in February 1983. These victims were identified as John Howlett, Archibald Graham Allen, and Stephen Sinclair, and presented Nielsen with a much greater disposal challenge. It's a fucking challenge every day.
Holy shit, this guy's fucking something else.
Yeah, given the apartment's lack of direct access outdoor space, he overcame these obstacles by boiling the heads, feet, and hands, and dissecting their bodies into small pieces that could be flushed down the toilet and disposed into plastic bags. That takes Swimming with the Fishes into a new,
You know, so he should have gotten together with the couple from my story. Maybe they would have gotten away with it.
If it weren't for the meddling kids.
And YouTube.
Yeah. There were five other tenants at Cranley Gardens, none of whom now knew Nilsson very well. And in early February 1983, one of them called out drain specialist Dino Rod to investigate a drain blockage. In the presence of the tenants, including Nilsson, the technician discovered rotting human remains when he descended via outdoor manhole, and it was decided that a full inspection would be conducted the next day, after which the police would be called in to investigate. Nilsson, increasingly aware of the prospect of capture, tried to cover his tracks by removing human tissue from the drains that night, but was spotted by the downstairs tenant, who became suspicious of his actions. It was reported of the morning of February 9th, 1983. He told a work colleague, laughingly, "If I'm not in tomorrow, I'll either be ill, dead, or in jail." And Nilsson was met on the evening of February 9th by Detective Chief Inspector Jay, who informed him that they wished to question him in relation to the human remains that they that had been discovered in the drains. Upon entering the apartment, Jay noticed a pervasive foul odor and asked Nilsson what it was, at which point he calmly confessed that what they were looking for was stored in bags around the apartment, which included two dismembered heads and other larger body parts. Upon his arrest, he immediately provided exhaustive details about his killing spree, admitting to killing 15 young men despite receiving legal caution. He also admitted to the attempted murder of seven others, although he could name only four of them. I mean, I guess, you know, when you let a couple go, it's just like, fuck them.
After so many, you lose track of their
names. Well, when you don't masturbate on their corpse, how could you remember their name?
Yeah, it's not very memorable if you don't.
Yeah, exactly. At no point did he show any remorse and appeared eager to assist the police with amassing the evidence against him, even taking them to his old address to point out the specific disposal details. After the confession, Nilsson was held at Brinkston Prison pending trial. Whilst there, he wrote over 50 notebooks of his memories to assist the prosecution, and also drew what referred to as sad sketches, which detailed his treatment of some of his victims, which is just him jerking off over bodies.
He seemed a fucking stick figure, jerking off over another stick figure on the bed.
It's a lot of white paint. He seemed ambivalent about his fate at turns without remorse. And then, showing concern about public attitudes towards him, he fired his legal counsel, then rehired him, and fired him once again, shortly before he came to trial. His trial commenced on October 24, 1983. Nilsson was charged with 6 counts of murder, 2 charges of attempted murder. He pleaded not guilty to all charges. What a fucking idiot. Citing diminished responsibility due to the mental defect, the prosecution relied primarily on the extensive interview notes that resulted from his arrest, which took over 4 hours to read verbatim to the jury, as well as the testimony of the 3 victims, Paul Knobs, Douglas Stewart, and Carl Stadter, who had managed to escape, and all of whom he had attempted to strangle. Despite attempts by Nielsen's defense to undermine the testimony of these victims by introducing evidence of their sexual encounters with Nilsson, their harrowing accounts inflicted serious damage on the defense case. Like, we know. Physical evidence included photographs of the murder scenes, as well as chopping board used to dissect the victims, and the cooking pot used to boil their skulls, feet, and hands, which is now on display at the Museum of Scotland Yard. That takes head, shoulders, knees, and toes a little bit extreme. The defense case relied primarily on the testimony of 2 psychiatrists, Dr. James McKeith and Dr. Patrick Galloway. McKeith described Nielsen's troubled childhood, inability to express feelings, and the resulting separation of mental function from physical behavior, which affected his own sense of identity and applied an impaired responsibility to the part of Nilsson. Under intense cross-examination by the prosecution, however, McKeith was forced to retract his judgment about diminished responsibility. The second psychiatrist, Galloway, diagnosed Nielsen as suffering from a false self syndrome, characterized by outbreaks of schizoid disturbances which made him incapable of premeditation. But most of his testimony was extremely technical, even giving the judge cause to question Galloway's complex diagnosis. The prosecution called Dr. Paul Bowden as a rebuttal psychiatrist who had spent considerable time with Nielsen, finding no evidence for much of the testimony put forth by defense psychiatrists. He stated that Nielsen was manipulative with some signs of mental abnormality, but nevertheless still cognitive and responsible for his actions. During the summing up, the judge dispensed with the majority of the psychiatric jargon that had perplexed the jury by insulting them that a mind can be evil without being abnormal. The jury retired on November 3rd, 1983, but were unable to reach an unanimous verdict. The following day, the judge agreed to accept a majority verdict, and at 4:25 p.m., they delivered a verdict of guilty on all six counts of murder. The judge sentenced Dennis Nielsen to life in prison without eligibility for parole for at least 25 years. And then, the old bastard died in prison in 2018. So he just died a few years ago. How'd you like my story?
Wow. Yeah, he has sex.
Yeah, I fuck. I jerk off on corpses.
Jesus Christ.
That was it. Wow. I had fun telling that.
Yeah, that was a... That was a good one. I'm gonna have to get that as a soundbite.
What? I fuck. Yeah, I fuck. Let's do it. What a sick proverbial little bastard. That's all I have to say.
Very sick.
Yeah, I mean, who jerks off on corpses and doesn't call back the next day?
Then he just shoves them under the floorboard.
Like yesterday's trash. Let me go fuck another corpse.
The dead bodies are wrapped up in the garbage bags over here. Okay, garbage day is Friday. I had to wait. God.
Fuck. Hey, neighbors, you guys want to have a bonfire? I got some fucking oral, I got this cow tongue and fucking, I got this skin remains. It burns really nice. What's it from? Don't worry about it.
It's a great fire starter.
Just know I fuck. It's about as bad as the Russian dude that fucked the Yeti, but you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, but.
Burning bodies, how did the neighbors not know? Like, that's a very distinctive smell.
Damn, it smells like barbecue out here. Hey, Frank, what are you cooking?
A couple steaks.
Oh, shit, put me on for one. You don't want... This is my special Wagyu fucking Japanese imported beef. I don't think you can have this.
It's way too expensive to share.
Yeah, go fuck yourself. Go fuck yourself, Keith. Go to hell! Just having a great old time. Man.
Yeah.
God, take a black light to his room. Just, God, all the fucking sperm everywhere. Fucking coming everywhere.
The majority of it's going to be located around this one section.
God, his whole bed is just glowing. God damn. Oh, God, sat there. It's on my ass. Just fucking happening.
Oh, man. Jesus Christ, that guy's something else.
Yeah, he was a pretty fucked up guy. He's a very weird dude.
Definitely not scary stories.
It's not a scary story.
Just fucking out there. Like,
I'm sorry, I had to put a spin on it.
I loved the spin. I was just meaning in general this week's episode.
Oh yeah,
not scary by any means, but just. Like, a lot of what the fucks.
A lot of what the fucks. Yeah, I fuck. It's going to be my new thing now. I'm just going to tell that to everybody.
They're going to come up to you and ask you, what time is it?
I fuck.
Yeah, I fuck.
No, no, no. I asked you what time it was. Frank, yeah. Frank.
Yeah, fuck.
Yeah. So what? Time to fuck. Yes, I agree with the Tiki Tech guy.
I do the sex all the time.
I do this. I fuck every day, Grandma.
In my car bed.
Yeah, I jerk off on corpses.
My sweet, sweet car bed.
Jesus Christ. Oh my God, is that...
It's got a CB so I can talk to all the other car beds.
Is that expensive Peruvian tile? It looks like flesh and blood all over the floor. Yeah, let's get with that. I spent a fortune on it, and, you know, it's like I spent an arm and a leg. Oh, man,
Jesus Christ,
we have too much fun on here. Yeah, I fuck. Gonna say that all the time. Okay.
Between that guy and then those teenage kids. Oh fuck.
Yeah, those teenage kids had it coming though. And too bad it wasn't on a bed.
Jesus Christ. Like, yeah. Bunch of sex. That's my payment for killing your dad.
You know, brought to you by Trojan condoms.
And Lysol.
And Lysol wipes. Stay clean while you're fucking. Because, yeah, we fuck. That's the new slogan. And, goddamn.
Jesus Christ, man.
Hey. Oh, yeah, did I tell you we got new merch out? We have a bed sheet that's just a dead guy.
It's just so what of a dead guy.
And it's got a target all over its fucking stomach. And so, yeah, you could be like, yeah, I fuck too all over this bed sheet. Brought to you by Fearful Thoughts.
Masturbating all over it.
Yeah. That's exactly what you do. The targets for, it's a suggestion. It's... Oh, man, this is too much fun.
Oh, man, yeah.
Okay.
I haven't laughed this hard in a while. This is fucking hilarious.
Me either, dude. I gotta say, it's hot as balls out here.
It is hotter than balls.
I'm ready
here.
To.
So,
you ready to wrap this
I'm
up?
I'm ready to fucking wrap this shit up because it's hot as balls. Somebody was supposed to bring, like, Otter Pops or some shit to keep us cool, but that didn't happen.
Oh, you fuckers looking at me for? Bastards! I should have. I have Otter Pops in my fridge, in my freezer, in my mini fridge at home, yeah. I
just have the alcoholic ones.
So those aren't bad.
Yeah.
Shit. Yeah, did you see earlier, and beer magically just was bestowed on me by the gods of alcohol and AA. Like, the techie-techiness just swooped it in and fucking...
Techie-techie god of alcohol.
Yeah, he gave me the original natural lime flavor. Yeah, I don't know why. Why wasn't it green? Why was it white? Oh, God. Oh, God. He fucks. He fucks. Anyway, let's wrap this up. Okay.
Baby. It's 12 or fearful thoughts. Goddamn heat's getting to me.
I know, it's fucking hot.
To all of our fearful followers,
be brave.
Stay scary.
And always be mindful of your fearful thoughts, you sick bastards.
I masturbate.
I fuck!